If people are working remotely, should they be taxed remotely? From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishour in for David Brancaccio. So a lot of people are working remotely during the pandemic, which is raising a tricky question. If your office or company is in one state, but you are working remotely in another, who gets the income tax revenue? Several states are fighting over this very question, and they want the Supreme Court to decide. Marketplace's Nova Sappho joins me now live. Good morning, Nova.
Good morning.
So at the heart of this case is a dispute between New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Phyllison, what's that about?
Yeah, and because this is a cross-border issue, New Hampshire went straight to the Supreme Court for a resolution. And what it's asking for is an answer to this pandemic-era question. If you're a New Hampshire resident who would normally commute to work in Massachusetts, but now you're working from home because of the pandemic, which state gets to tax you? Massachusetts, where you'd normally be working from, or New Hampshire, where you're temporarily working from? And as you mentioned, a number of states are caught up in this dispute. They've filed briefs in support or opposition of New Hampshire's position.
Well, there were telecommuters before the pandemic. How were they taxed?
So typically, there's two ways states tax income. One is reciprocity agreements. We asked Kim Rubin with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center to explain.
For example, if you worked in D.C. but you lived in Maryland, Maryland would get that income tax. In other states, they're more aggressive at saying that if you do work physically in their state, they want to collect income taxes from that activity.
In that second scenario for more aggressive states like Massachusetts, now the question is, what if you'd be working from an office located within their borders, but for the pandemic? There's billions of dollars of taxes at stake on the answer to that question.
All right. Marketplace's Nova Sappho. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Next week, the Trump administration's ban on most immigrant workers is set to expire. That policy, which went into effect early in the pandemic in order to protect jobs, according to the administration, exempted healthcare workers. But even with access to workers from abroad, healthcare providers are scrambling for additional staff as COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations rise. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Several states have sped up the certification process for healthcare workers trained abroad. Michael Fix is a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute, which estimates there are more than 260,000 immigrant professionals
with health or medical related college degrees or more who are not working, who are underemployed.
Immigrants already working in healthcare are in some of the highest risk jobs, says Catherine Siniza Choi, an ethnic studies professor at UC Berkeley.
We see this most powerfully in the devastating toll it has taken on specific groups of immigrants, such as Filipino immigrant nurses.
According to the National Nurses Association, more than a third of nurses who've died of COVID-19 and related complications are Filipino, even though they are just 4% of RNs in the U.S. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Most markets in the world are closed for Christmas, but here is a number for you. 14 million Americans. That's the number of people whose unemployment aid is set to end tomorrow without coronavirus relief. In the last recession, enrollment numbers at community colleges actually rose, and that's what some of these colleges were expecting this time around as people struggled to find work this fall. Instead, they saw a decrease. Damon Mitchell of WPLN in Nashville reports the decline is in part driven by a drop in adult learners.
Anisha Thomas works at a Tennessee Waffle House. She's also a student at Nashville State Community College. In the fall, Thomas was basically her daughter's homeschool teacher.
If I was able to take a break from school this semester, I most certainly would have.
But she couldn't take a break because her scholarship program requires steady enrollment. Thomas is in her mid-30s. Like many adult students, she's been juggling a lot during the pandemic.
My job starts at 7 o'clock. My kid had to go to a babysitter. I get off at 2 o'clock. Then I go pick up my child. And then me and my 7-year-old try to do school at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Many adults with that kind of schedule haven't been able to keep up with their own courses. Tennessee Community Colleges saw a 12% drop in enrollment overall. Amy Moreland is a Tennessee Higher Education Policy Director. She says the drop was surprising to some officials.
In past economic recessions, community colleges got a boost in enrollment driven by adult students.
The U.S. Census found that two-year college enrollment grew by 33%, leading up to and during the Great Recession. But this fall, with the pandemic, community college enrollment is down nearly 10% nationwide. That figure includes traditional students and adult students aged 25 and older. That's according to the National Student Clearinghouse. The thought is that some adult learners likely had to help their children with their own education. Shauna Jackson is the president of Nashville State Community College. She says although enrollment is down overall, they've increased support for adult students by making classes more accessible. They're also providing technology to students who need it.
We, for this fall, for the first time as a college, have a laptop loaner program so that if you don't have technology, we're going to make sure that you have it.
And Jackson says the school is now looking at ways to shorten the amount of time it takes to get an associate's degree. In Nashville, I'm Damon Mitchell for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Alex Schroeder. Our engineers are Brian Allison and Jay Siebold. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. Merry Christmas. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.